it's nice that there are a lot of generous people out there offering their transmitters, their receivers, and what have you. It's part of what makes this hobby great. So it's a pleasure to talk to you today, John. I hope we talk down the line.
Oh, very good. I do have a right now I don't have a put up. That'd be nice to put over the cell phone to you. Okay, you have a signed up C3.
Okay, very good, John. There's a little bit of packet loss in your Echolink transmission. I don't know exactly where it might be coming from, you know, with those packets can drop anywhere. But again, thank you for participating. Thank you for coming over to the net, and I hope we hear from you again in future Sundays. So take it easy, be well, stay safe. 73. Okay, once again, I continue to be AC2GS, I continue to be Roy, and this continues to be the Limemark Technical Net. So again, we have a little bit more time. I don't know if I'm tempting fate here, but if anyone has any other comments, questions, answers, topics, what have you, and...
One more time.
Yes, Chet.
Well, this is entirely out of every and away from every subject that that people might want to hear. It's not about amateur radio or whatever, but interesting thing. U.S. News and Reports did a national survey of counties. There's 3,000 counties in the United States of America. And believe it or not, right next to Limerock's repeater, looking down at it, Nassau County is number one in the entire United States for safety and security. How about that?
Ah, that's good to hear. I'm sure everyone there in Nassau appreciates that. I don't exactly know where Kings County lands on that. You know, we have some dubious neighborhoods, but I feel safe. I know people who don't feel safe no matter what, but I don't know. I was born and bred in good old Brooklyn, and I usually am not afraid of Brooklyn. But it's good to hear about Nassau.
Yeah, and I can't move. I'm too old. I'm another year. I'll be 80. God willing. Too late. 15 years ago, I was thinking of moving down south. But anyway, I'm here. Too late to move. One good thing about Nassau County also is the amount of hospitals and medical services. It's incredible. I hear about people in other states, you know, I talk to them on the phone and they can't get any medical coverage, or like my sister in North Carolina, in the hills of North Carolina by Tennessee. And whenever she has something wrong, yes, there are those quick med places, but not, you know, if you have to go to a hospital out that way, it takes you over an hour and a half to drive to the first hospital. And over here in Nassau County, geez, it's incredible the amount of services in there, you know, in medical fields there. Wow, we're very lucky. So, all right. Oh, by the way, Brooklyn came in either 20 or 30, and believe it or not, I forget now. If you can look it up in U.S. News and Reports, It came in 20 or the 30th. Sussex County is also either 20 or 30, whereas Nassau County came in number one. But we're talking about security and, you know, things of that sort. So, anyway, I found that the other day. All right, have a good one, WB2AHK.
Thank you, you too. Yeah, I'll take 20, top 20, top 30. There's a metropolitan area, you know, I mean, Manhattan is the mecca of medical care. You know, people travel across the world to go to Manhattan medical facilities. Unfortunately, the trend as I've seen it is to decrease the density of hospital beds. There's this perpetual kind of squeezing of efficiency, trying to make the most profit off of a given dollar. So there have been more than a few New York City hospitals that have consolidated and some that have just closed over the years, and the trend does not look like it's going to reverse anytime soon. So, yeah, we might as well enjoy the access that we have to good medical care, at least while we have it. So, once again, as always, Chet, thanks for participating. I appreciate it. I enjoy our conversations. Once again, I'm still AC2GS. We still have a few more minutes. If anyone is so inclined, has any questions or comments or topics for discussion, hit that push to talk and say hello. Okay, I don't think I'm going to kick that dead horse anymore tonight. I want to thank everyone who participated tonight. I appreciate it. And as I've often said, you guys make and or break these technical nets. They are not television shows or radio shows. They're not monologues. They are dialogues. And you can't have a dialogue without another person. So, you know, it is what you make this. I try my best. In memory of Dick, K2IW, may rest in peace. He did amazing, magical things with these hours every Sunday night, and I just want to try my best to bring you a technical net that serves the purposes of hams in the area. So, once again, I thank everyone who participated tonight, and I hope that you'll come back next Sunday when we do this all over again. But now is as good a time to segue with Paul, WS2N, and the SpaceNet Report.
AC2GS, WS2N. Yeah, it sounds quiet out there now. But, we'll move on forward here. We'll find a couple of topics we can talk about for the SpaceNet report. Yes, quite a few good topics. Wesley had a lot of topics that were interesting as well. The Space Launch System, which is supposed to launch a crew of four to the moon next September. So we got a little over a year. And they plan on orbiting the moon really just once and then coming back and landing in the Pacific Ocean. You know, and they talk about what they're going to do going there and how they're going to get back and all. But one of the things that NASA worries about is the launch. And yeah, they have a launch abort system that's very common with a lot of the rockets that launch in the United States for years. You know, they had this they call the tractor system. They put this solid booster rockets on top of the spacecraft. So for any reason the booster decides to fail and maybe blow up, the solid boosters ignite in milliseconds and pull the crew away safely. They had it for Mercury. They had it for Gemini. Correction, they did not have it for Gemini, but they had it for Apollo. And I think for Gemini, they were really rolling the dice with those 10 flights that they had. But the theory was the spacecraft itself would ignite its engines and push itself away. Well, you know, what could happen is, you know, there could be a problem on the launch pad right before they detect a possible explosion, and they might decide, let's get the crew out of there right away. So before they launch, the door would blast open. They could get the doors open very quickly, not like the 1967 flight. You know, it was January 27th when we lost three astronauts during that fire on Apollo 1. They could not get that door open. It takes way too much time. Now they can get it open quick. Well, you can imagine the door, you know, coming up open quick, and then the crew getting themselves out of there. Now, nobody else is on the launch pad. So how do they save themselves? This booster could be blowing up anytime soon. What they have is these cables going down from the top of the rocket, you know, from where they get in, all the way down, you know, all the way down as far as it takes away from the rocket. And the SLS system is probably around 600-foot cable, because the top of the rocket is, you know, almost, yeah, 350 feet high, you know, where they are. So they have an interesting system, for SLS. Anyway, they have the one cable car for each astronaut. So you would have four astronauts, you have four of these cars right next to each other with long cables coming down. And NASA's already installed these things. And I found this one interesting because this is going to be the first time they use a magnetic braking system. So as it goes down, they say it creates this eddy type of magnetic field, which helps slow it down. Previous ones, you know, on the Apollo system, for instance, or nowadays on the what will be the Vulcan rocket when that launches, or SpaceX, they have, you know, cables that go down to save the crew. Some of them, you know, they kind of like sit on it and they kind of hold on to it, you know. But this is an actual a little car that each one jumps into. But, you know, I found the idea of using a magnetic braking system interesting. The article was, you know, from NASA. And what they did is they went over to Orlando to talk to the amusement ride people, because they have similar systems. They have the same idea on some of their rides. And they were getting ideas and comparing and seeing what they could do to improve that system. You know, I just haven't read any details on this yet, so I'm interested in finding that out. I'll probably find that out, you know, next week or so. It's a nice picture of it that NASA had. And so you can either go to their website, or Dr. Roy put it on his website. So if you go to roy.ac2gs.com, and you scroll down a little bit, you'll see the picture of what this cable car looks like. And if you go to the NASA site, you know, you can actually click on like a little video, and you know, as if you're riding down inside of this thing. You know what they have nowadays, but it's an actual you know, picture. It's not an animation. So, any questions, comments, or about this or anything else dealing with the space program? This is WS2N. Name here is Paul.
Kilo Echo 2 Alpha Juliet Uniform. Paul, how are you?
Very good. Kilo Echo 2 Alpha Juliet Uniform.
Very good, Charlie.
doing good. Just listened to a very interesting net here, and here we are. Do you have any comments or questions, Charlie?
Yes, I got a couple. When they do that moonshot, what engine are they going to use? Are they going to keep the Falcon, or are they going to use the Raptor?
Are you talking about the SLS that NASA's building to launch the crew of four around the moon and back, and eventually the missions after that? That rocket or a different one?
Yes.
Okay, that has nothing to do with the Falcon or the Starship or Elon Musk or SpaceX or anything. Not for launching off the launch pad. The SLS consists of, you're going to have a core stage, and then you're going to have a second stage after that, and then you're going to have the Orion spacecraft on top of that. So the core stage consists of four RS-25 engines. Liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen engines. The exact same engines, except they're beefed up, more improved. But they're the engines that the shuttle used. When the shuttle went up, you saw three engines on the shuttle itself. They're the same liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen engines, RS-25 engines. And then you saw two big boosters on the starboard side and port side. And those boosters are solid boosters, aluminum tetroxide fuel. It's like a solid powder, primarily aluminum flakes, really. And when those things ignite, they put all, that's the main thrust. In the shuttle days, each one was around 3 million pounds of, almost 3 million pounds of thrust. When this one goes off, it's also going to have those same boosters, except they're going to be longer. Shuttle had four segments, SLS. This one will have five segments, one on top of the other. But, when they ignite, it's like one big rocket, or one big engine. So you're going to have those two engines. On SLS, it'll be around 7 million pounds of thrust just for that, three and a half. And then the RS-25 engines, liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen engines, the four of them are the same ones that the shuttle had, but each one collectively is around 550,000 pounds of thrust or so. So just over 2 million pounds of thrust on that one itself. Collectively, it'll probably be around 9 million pounds, and they have plans on upgrading those engines as well in the future. Around 9 million pounds of thrust compared to Apollo. When Apollo went up on the Saturn V rocket, that was 7.5 million pounds of thrust. So this is almost 2 million pounds of thrust more than the Saturn V. Now, the first 2 minutes, those solid booster rockets will separate. The port and starboard side, they'll separate around two and a half minutes. And that leaves the core stage with those three, now four engines, used to be three on shuttle, now four. They'll continue to fire with liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen, all the way to orbit. Around 8.5 minutes or so, they'll shut down, and that core stage will separate, leaving the next stage above that to ignite. The one above that has aerojet engines. They're called C-10L is the number that they use. But essentially, what those engines are liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen. Again, on the first mission around the moon with people, you're going to have one of those engines, RL-10, they call them RL-10 engines. And they launch with 25,000 pounds of thrust. We drop it. And that's called the in-term cryogenic propulsion system, ICPS. That's what they'll use for that final stage. The future missions on Artemis, Artemis 3, Artemis 4, and so forth, they're going to use the exploration upper stage. They're going to do away with the one engine, hydrogen and liquid oxygen, and they're just going to put four of them instead of one. So it'll still be liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen on that stage, but now it'll have four, you know, each one roughly 25,000 pounds of thrust, close to 100,000 pounds of thrust on that. So that will be able to really increase their up mass all the way to the moon. They'll be able to bring maybe another extra module to the Gateway, or the Gateway space station, which will be going around the moon, plus the crew. So that's the latest on the SLS space launch system. Charlie, back to you.
But on the SLS space system, is anything reusable? Is it anything going to land back down to Earth?
No, the only thing that's going to be reusable are the people, the four astronauts. The Orion spacecraft will come through the atmosphere after going around the moon. After the service module separates, that will come through with heat shield and all. And that will land in the Pacific Ocean. And they'll get the crew out that way. That spacecraft, initially when that was being designed 20 years ago, they said, let's make that thing reusable. But that idea has gone out the window. It'll be a one, just a one-time only. If you want to get into reusability, now we're going to go into different companies like Relativity or Firefly SpaceX, you know, those rockets are different. Now, the only time SpaceX is going to get involved with the moon project will be, now, this Orion spacecraft on Artemis 3 will actually have a crew. Their plan now is to actually have that crew land. So the first crew that goes up next September, around the moon, back, land in the Pacific. The one that goes up after that, another crew of four, that will go orbit the moon, and then the idea is to dock with a SpaceX vehicle, SpaceX Starship vehicle, the one that he keeps launching, that they keep blowing up. And by the way, there's going to be a fifth one that's going up very soon. Hope that thing doesn't blow up. And then even the last one that, they said it was successful. It came back and landed in the water, and then to me, successful is landing on land and being able to reuse it. I mean, if it's supposed to be a reusable vehicle, so far none of them are reusable, but that's the goal with SpaceX, to make these gigantic Starship vehicles, which are ignite. Their thrust is going to be even more than the space launch system that they have today, maybe 13, 14, 15 million pounds of thrust, Space launch system at their max, even when they improve their engines, probably be 10 or 10 and a half million pounds of thrust. So that's the only time SpaceX will get involved. They'll dock with the crew in orbit around the moon with their Starship. Once they perfect the Starship, Starship will take the crew, land vertically on the moon. So, vertical takeoff, vertical landing. The door will open up at the top, after they land. And now they have this contraption, this, this looks like a rope and pulley system. I would imagine it's not a rope, but I hope not. Anyway, the this contraption that they're going to get on and lower themselves down. You got to remember, Starship is well, from the bottom up is like 230 feet. So that means, you know, they're going to have to go down like 180 feet, you know, on this cable to get down to the surface of the moon. They'll do their EVA, they'll walk around the moon, collect their rocks, whatever they're going to do, and now they got to pull themselves, or I guess probably hit a button and take it a ride back up and then get into the spacecraft. And I think he's taking these, all these ideas from the 1950s, you know. You watch some of these old 1950 movies, they're kind of similar to this type of thing. But, yeah. And then after that, they dock with the Orion spacecraft again around the moon. And the Orion spacecraft will take them back to the, back to Earth. Now, the Starship that went down, up and down, is supposed to be reusable. So, future crews that are going to come out are going to use the same Starship, except it's going to be refueled and bring crews, you know, up and down to the moon. I think we got a long way to go. What do you think, Charlie, before this happens?
Now, they're building bigger engines, more powerful engines. What is the sonic boom like on one of these engines?
Well, that's irrelevant to the power of the engine, you know. Sonic boom only has to do with the speed. You know, once you get up to, you know, say, at that atmosphere, you know, once they go 600-700 miles an hour, you know, then you get the sonic boom back here on Earth. So, you know, that really doesn't matter on how powerful the engines are. You know, a light, rocket like the Rocket Lab, Electron rocket, you know, when they go up, you know, they'll create a sonic boom. And it's only, you know, maybe one-tenth or smaller than the Space Launch System. But, you know, it's irrelevant. I mean, the noise that is created, you know, the amount of dBs that are coming off the launch pad, of course, that's going to be much larger. And then they already know what it is because they've already launched the Space Launch System already, you know. They already sent a crew vehicle around the moon and back and landed in the Pacific Ocean. The only difference between that flight and the next flight in this September will be a crew will be on board. So they know how noisy it's going to be when it takes off, from experience. About a year and, I guess, a year and a half, almost a year and a half, probably a year and 4 months. It was a December launch. I don't know. But that was very successful. 25 days went around the moon and came back. And they learned a lot from it. And it was very successful, by the way. Back to you, Charlie.
Okay, Boeing's latest software update could leave Starliner able to dock on its own. What kind of software problems were they having?
The Starliner, yeah, that's the one that's now attached to the International Space Station for the last, well, since June 5th, when it launched with the crew with ham radio operator Sonny Williams and Butch Wilmore, successfully docked with the space station. Not without some problems. They had some thruster problems. So, Boeing, you know, the Starliner is built by Boeing, has been working through all these different problems, and they haven't come up with the exact root cause yet, and they've done a lot of testing with thrusters back on Earth. The crew's happy playing around with the other crew on station. But they're not coming back anytime soon from the last news conference I heard, because they cannot figure out the root cause, and nobody wants to make the determination on should we bring the crew back on Starliner or leave them up there. That will be the final decision from NASA Administrator Bill Nelson, and that's yet to come. I'm going to guess a couple of weeks from now they'll make a decision on what they're going to do. If they decide to leave them up there, then what you're saying is true. The spacecraft Starliner will come back by itself all autonomously, which it's done already, by the way. I mean, a couple of years ago it was already docked to the International Space Station without a crew, and spent some time attached and eventually separated from the space station and landed successfully in White Sands in Mexico. And they'll do the same thing. That vehicle is designed to come back automatically with or without a crew. So the same thing will happen. And then the crew will still be on space station. They'll eventually come back with a SpaceX Dragon vehicle. And that's, they're still working out the logistics on that. You need two seats. The next crew that's supposed to go up is August 18th, I believe it is, and that's supposed to go up with a crew. If they make the decision that Sonny Williams and Butch Wilmore are going to come back on, you know, without their Starliner, that means they're going to come back on Dragon. Dragon will have to go up with just two people. Now, those two people, their flight is designed to last 6 months, which means the Starliner crew, instead of coming back, what they thought originally was 8 days, and now it's 2 months. And if they plan on coming back on a SpaceX Dragon vehicle, they're not going to wait 2 months or 3 months. They're going to wait almost another 5 months from now before they come back. I think the predicted date would be February, so they'll have a long time on space station. And then they'll come back with the same two that came up August 18th. Back to you, Charlie. WS2N.
I hope they don't mind the 6 month delay.
Yeah, well, I've seen a lot of things written about these people. Both of them, for both of them, this is their third flight to space. They've each spent almost 6 months on the space station in the past. But, you know, separate missions. So they're used to it. They've done that on a regular basis now. In fact, the crews that are on there now, you have seven other people besides them. They're all on, you know, extended missions like that. Well, not extended, but, you know, 5 or 6 month missions. So they'll be fine with that. They say the families, you know, they expected them back, you know, in a couple of weeks. You know, I've heard that, you know, the families might not be happy about this, you know. You know, they want to spend the holidays with them. You know, the holidays are going to come and go, and they'll be coming back in 2025. Back to you, John.
Yeah, SpaceX had a busy weekend. What, they had three launches? They had two for the satellite, and one for the space station for new food and things like that. They now have 6,280 satellites. They want 42,000. And each span of the satellite has a lifespan of about 5 years. Can't they push this lifestyle a little longer, like 10 years or 15?
Yeah, Maybe they will in the future, you know, as time goes on, you know, they improve on these on satellites. We have satellites in geosynchronous orbit that have gone 15 years, and then they, a lot of them get extended missions, you know, another 5 years. I heard the 42,000 number. That came out of China. China wants to do that. Elon Musk is 6,000. He wants to shoot for, unless you heard something different, I thought it was, I forget, some ridiculous number, 20,000 or so. But, you know, yeah, maybe he wants 40,000 too. You know, I'm not happy about that. I think that's ridiculous. You're creating a real potential problem, and China's doing the same thing. Jeff Bezos from Amazon, you know, he owns Blue Origin. He wants to put up 3,000 satellites, a little over 3,000 satellites. He's got two of them up there already, but it's going to be the same thing, communication satellites. So, I don't know, can't they just work HF like we do and, you know, wait for the ionosphere to, you know, be cooperative so we can talk to Europe? Back to you, Sean.
Well, as far as China, they just launched the first batch of G-60 satellites. Are they any better or worse or what?
That was the Long March 6 rocket. You know, they name all their rockets after the Long March of China. So I think this was their second batch that went up, and yeah, they plan on over 40,000 of these things, but this one didn't work out too good on the second batch. The second stage, it looks like it blew up to me because there's now debris in that orbital plane from who knows how many satellites they had on board, or, you know, anywhere probably between 20 and 40 satellites, all communication satellites. So that didn't work out. That's what I'm saying. I'm not happy about this stuff. You know, you have tons of debris. Could last, you know, months that they're at. And especially if they're damaged. If they're not damaged, they usually have a way to deorbit themselves, you know, when they're not going to cause a problem. But we'll see, Charlie. I don't know. I know I'm not using the Starlink system. I understand it's like $500 when the price went up. I think it used to be around $400. Now I think one station at home is around $600. And you have a monthly fee of, I think it was around $140 or something. So, I mean, I have no use for it. Back to you, Sean.
As far as the Chinese, they're not very successful sending these rockets up. Was a rocket that, what, blew up on their launch pad a week ago or 2 weeks ago?
Yes, I remember that. So, they're not having any luck with it. And they have, I think it's five different launch pads around the country, different locations. So, you know, there's always a backup for them. They just built a new complex right on the water, right on the, I guess, the China Sea. They've been launching out of there lately, too. So, you know, they planned on doing 120 some odd launches or more this year, they said. SpaceX, I mean, they're over 100 already. They were hoping for 200 or more this year. It's unbelievable. And then, you know, you have other companies as well, and they're not launching as much, but, you know, once in a while, Boeing, not Boeing, United Launch Alliance launches a rocket. Rocket Labs, that's an American company. They're launching rockets. I think their plan is to get around 20 or so off the ground this year. Collectively, they're just over 50 since 2017. But their manifest is increasing, so they're launching more and more often. So we're not going to be able to keep track of, well, already I can't keep track of all the launches. This year collectively, probably going to be maybe 350 or so launches worldwide. And that's only going to accelerate. Back to you.
I think Starliner wanted 142 just for this year alone.
That's SpaceX? Yeah, that would be SpaceX with their Falcon 9 rocket. And then they have the Falcon 9 Heavy, you know, three of them bolted together, you know. Anyway, I just want to mention that the Perseus meteor shower starts, I guess, late tonight. You know, after 11 o'clock, preferably later, you know, closer to the morning. So I'm not going to be out there, but if somebody was out there, maybe they get up early for work and they could look up into the, northern sky to see, I think they said probably one every minute or so. And this goes on all week, you know, I mean, the main one is for tonight. But then, next 6 days, you're gonna have opportunities to see these meteors coming through the atmosphere. So, time for meteor scatter. Remember that? I don't know if anybody still does that. I'll have to look that up. I'm sure they do. Used to be popular on 6 Meteors, and some of the other bands have done it as well. But I guess that could be done any time, but more popular during the Perseus meteor shower. We'll see. Any comments?
When showers come, if we're looking to the north, are they coming from the east or the west?
I think in the middle of the night at 1 o'clock, I think I read that you would look toward the north, the northeast. But, it's weird, you know, they're not really coming from anywhere. The Earth is actually running into them. You know, they're in orbit around the sun. They're remnants of a comet called Swift Tuttle, broke up decades ago to some degree, and left the remnants, you know, constantly in orbit around the sun. And every year we get close to it, you know, because that's on a bit of an elliptical path around the sun, and Earth is circular. So every year we come around and we run into the remnants of Swift Tuttle comet, and they call it the Perseus meteor shower. And we hit the stuff at, it depends on the angle we're hitting, could be anywhere up to, the Earth revolves around the sun at 60,000 miles an hour. 60,000 miles an hour. So let's say we hit the Perseus, you know, not head on, but, you know, coming in at a 90 degree angle, we would be hitting it at that speed, 50 or 60,000 miles per hour. So all those little flakes and meteors, you know, instantly vaporize when they hit the upper atmosphere. Back to you, Charlie.
Okay, I just wanted to ask about the SpaceX Falcon 9 launched today, okay? It was launched for the 21st time. The stage made a journey to space and back, according to SpaceX. That was one mission shy of the SpaceX reusable record.
Yeah, I heard they were getting close to 20, so that means one of them already has gone to 20, 21, or even 22 launches. That's incredible. You know, they got 9 engines on each one, you know. And they looked them over, you know, fix anything that's broken, put it back out on the launch pad, and off they go again. You know, it's like a commercial airplane now. Very good. Naturally, the second stage does not come back. Well, it comes back. The second, third stage goes into orbit and burns up. Second, third stage has one Merlin engine on it. The first stage that comes back, they have 9 Merlin engines. They're the ones that, of course, are reusable. So they had plans decades ago of eventually reusing the second stage. Blue Origin has plans to of doing that. They plan on launching by the end of the year. I hope they get off the ground with their new Glenn rocket, another massive thing, twice the power of the Falcon 9 rocket, big rocket. So we'll see how they do. We'll follow them till the end of the year. They've got a lot of infrastructure. They've got Launch Complex 36 down in Florida, almost ready to go. They've already brought a rocket out to test the rocket. So I'm predicting in a couple of months they should be almost ready to do that. That'll be great. And that rocket will be reusable. That will also land on a barge out at sea, 600 miles away from Florida. And the second stage at this time will not be reusable, but they do have long-term plans on eventually doing that many years from now. That's a New Glenn rocket built by Blue Origin. Looking forward to those. Once they start going, too, he's got a big manifest, one right after the other. And he's so confident of the first launch, and so is NASA, that they're putting two satellites on board that are not going to orbit Earth. The first flight of New Glenn will be right to Mars, and they're sending two satellites to Mars. So we'll see. They call them the Escapade site, satellites. We'll see. Back to you, Charlie, before I'm starting to get late. Back to you, WS2N.
Do you think they can get 25 to 30 times for the first stage rocket? 25 to 30 uses out of that?
Blue Origin, that's their plan. And well, SpaceX is doing it now. You said they got up to, 21 or 22. But Blue Origin plans on doing the same thing as well. So we'll see. Oh, yeah, you know, I wanted to mention, you mentioned before that SpaceX sent a spacecraft to the International Space Station for supplies. Yeah, they sent the Cygnus spacecraft up. And that's a cargo vehicle with 8,000 pounds worth of resupplies, you know. Everything from clothes to food to water to oxygen to, scientific equipment, you know, you name it. But when it's separated from the second stage of the Falcon 9, something went wrong. We didn't do it, but there was a problem with the Cygnus trying to get to the space station. So they worked on it for about 24 hours or so, and NASA came up with a solution. And whatever it was, whatever they did, apparently it worked, and they successfully docked with the space station. Well, they call it berth. They berthed with the space station. There's a difference between docking and berthing. Berthing is when they grab the spacecraft that's coming up with the 57-foot robotic arm, when it's built in Canada, that's attached to the International Space Station. That arm attaches it to one of the modules. In this case, they attach it to the Earth-facing Unity module on the International Space Station. And it's a wide diameter, around 52 inches. And they have these 16 bolts, 5/8-inch bolts that tighten up electronically with motors on it. And that's how they, and they have a gasket there, and that's how they create a seal. So that was successfully done. And the difference between berthing and docking is docking is when they come in, and the spacecraft either by astronaut or autonomously connects with the space station without using a robotic arm. That's when it's docked to, with a SpaceX vehicle or now with Starliner that's attached to the space station. They dock to the, they call it the IDA, the International Docking Adapter by NASA. They connect to that. And the door that opens up there, the hatch that opens up with the crew in, is only 1 meter in diameter. That's it. So we're, roughly, 30, almost 36 inches in diameter. Where when they berth a vehicle, they have almost 50 inches to play, bring stuff in and out. So you bring larger pieces of equipment, like maybe scientific racks or something, on a regular cargo vehicle, compared to just docking with either crew vehicle. SpaceX has their resupply vehicle. They used to berth to the space station, but they don't do that anymore. They dock, even with the cargo vehicle. That's it. That's the time. Unless you have something else further, Charlie, I think we'll turn it back to Roy.
Okay, Roy. Enjoy.
Thanks, Charlie, for all your questions. We'll be back here next week, hopefully. And for now, we're going to turn it over to Roy, AC2GS, WS2N for the SpaceNet report for the TechNet. Back to you, Roy.
AC2GS, our rebels now are done. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for the SpaceNet report. Thank you for all that you do for the technical net and all that you do for the club. We all appreciate it, and I especially appreciate it. And I appreciate everyone else who participated tonight. Thanks a lot. As I often say, it's you guys that make or break a technical net. I'm glad that you were here with me. I hope some of you learned some things, and I hope you were at least entertained. And I hope you'll join us next Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do this all over again. As per usual, I will close with the previous guy who ran this technical net for more than 40 years, K2RIW. We would often end the technical nets with advice to be kind to each other, and that's always good advice. I'll add a line from Epictetus. It's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. Keep your mind open to new ideas, but don't open them too wide or your brains might fall out. And everyone, have a great week. Stay safe, be well, enjoy yourself, and come back next Sunday. And as always, I will be clear after I say, Slava Ukraine.
1973, and they finally invaded Russia. Turn 3, Roy, WB2BX.
It had to happen one of these days. After all, Russia apparently otherwise would not sue for peace without holding on to other people's land. So now they can exchange land.
Yeah, I'm wondering if it's a diversionary strike and that what they're really going to do is invade Crimea. But I think the pundits agree with you that the idea is to I'll give you back yours if you give me back mine, and that's going to be the end of it.
I'm also interested to see what happens when F-16s get added to the mix.
Yeah, well, there was some footage a week or two ago of the F-16s are presumably landing in Ukraine. So, supposedly they're about ready to get into combat out there. I don't know how many they actually have. Probably one squadron. So, like the Abrams tanks, nobody's really sure how much difference that's going to make.
Well, better to have them than not have them. And as time goes on, there'll probably be more F-16s geared up because they have to kind of build up a lot of technical assistance. Pilots have to be thoroughly trained on using them. They're not like their Russian-designed jets that they've been using before. So it'll probably get more important as time goes on.
Yeah, well, a couple of months ago I spoke online to a ham who was a F-16 technician, and he told me, you know, the contract he was working on was done, he was looking for something else, and then the next week he said, never mind, I got something. So, knowing that F-16s are sort of being phased out of our inventory, I was like, that's interesting, but I'm not going to ask because I'm not going to get an answer.
Yeah, it's above our pay grade. There'll always be a market for pilots and engineers and technicians and such. The machines of war will unfortunately always be necessary.
Anyway, I want to let you go, sir, 3. But good to say hello to everybody. WB2BX, so.
73, Frank. And 73 to anyone still listening. This is AC2GS, and I will finally be clear.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.